Welcome to the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Tower, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and back with us, the man who had another very busy week, Mets legend, their former skipper and analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Mr. Terry Collins. How you doing, TC?
I'm doing great, John. Looking forward to another big show.
Yes, we're going to have a good one today. Lots going on, obviously, with the season starting. We have a special guest coming on for the first time, Laura Albanese of Newsday and SNY will be joining us as well. And you've had another very busy week. You had a trip to New York. You have another trip coming to New York this week. And you had participation in the Tunnel to Tower Celebrity Charity Golf Outing yesterday in Palm Springs. So we have all of that to look forward to, Terry. Let's get right into the leadoff. And let's start with your trip to New York and the appearance at the Mets house in Union Square with Noah Syndergaard. It's a brand new thing, the Mets house. What'd you think of it first of all?
Well, it was very impressive. It was, it's done very, very well. I mean, lots of people, a lot of them came to see Noah, I'm sure, but you know, it's an interesting store. It's a great location. I always believe that, you know, with the fan base in New York, there should be a Mets store somewhere so people can go get their Mets t-shirts or Mets caps and the newest looking stuff. And we had a tremendous turnout for Noah and I for about an hour and a half we were there, and it was just one person after another coming in for a photo, and had a great time with Noah.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to discuss Noah with you, but the Mets posted a video of those events, and I like to play that for you right now. I know you haven't seen it, so let's play it, Marsh, our creative director, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
We are going to hand out some tickets so you can ride the bus and come to the watch party and join Noah and I. So, all right?
Let's go, Mets!
Let's go.
Had Mr. and Mrs. Met there too.
They didn't miss a trick. I'm going to tell you, to be honest, and I don't, you know, everybody, but I'm going to tell you, Steve and Alex are doing such a great job of putting together things for the fans, you know, to promote the team and what they're doing. It's really, really fun to be a part of it.
Yeah. And getting to see Noah, I know we had him on the show last season. Was this the first time you actually got to get together with him in a while, or have you seen him recently?
No, this is the first time. And we got together, had a little bite before we went to the team store and had a great conversation. He's still in tremendous shape. I mean, goodness gracious, he looks absolutely great. And he's just still working, trying to work on his mechanics. He's hoping to get back in the game. He doesn't know if it's going to be this year or in the future. I'm actually going to try to set up I've got some great pitching friends of mine. And Noah right now, he's been overcoached, John, a little bit. He's trying to get his release points back. He's still throwing mid-90s, but he just hasn't got the command that he thinks he needs to have to be able to compete at the major league level. And if there's one guy I'm rooting for, it's him, because when he first came up, he asked all the right questions. He made adjustments. He learned a two-seam fastball that all of a sudden got easy outs. Mm-hmm. He learned a changeup. The day that they taught him a changeup, he took it into the game and threw about 12 of them. and had never thrown one in the game before. And that just tells you the kind of competitor he is, and just how, you know, he absorbs stuff and he takes it and puts it to use. It was a great time. And like I said, I'm rooting for him, and I hope he gets another chance because he's still young. He's 32 years old, and there's a lot left in that big body.
Yeah, he expressed that desire when we had him on the podcast last season that he wanted to get back in the game. And then, you know, you're saying, he felt like he was overcoached, and you listen to a lot of people. But he's, you know, I would love to see him get one more shot. I would love to see him because I guess he wants to end his career on his own terms.
On his own terms. That's exactly right. That's exactly what he said, John. But, you know, and being a coach, one of the things, certainly we want to try to make an impact if we can on every player we're around. But, you know, once in a while, you got to let them be themselves. And there are times where you want to make an impact when sometimes there's too many voices in your head talking. You know, one guy wants you to use your lower half more. One guy wants you to get your arm up higher. One guy you got to get on top of the ball more. You've got more four-seam fastballs, more sliders. And I think, you know, when you try to please everybody, and Noah's the kind of guy who listens and wants to try what he's being told, is now just got so many voices in his head that he can't find out which one's working best for him.
Yeah. Well, it was also kind of cool to see that the Mets, you know, brought him back, you know, brought him in for this thing. And I don't recall them doing anything previously with him, like separately, personal appearances or something like that. So hopefully, you know, that relationship with the Mets and with Steve and Alex Cohen, they're always very kind to the alumnus that have been with the team. So it was good to see, and it looked like you guys had a lot of fun. That was very cool. You're actually heading back to New York this week for opening day, and a special tribute to one of your dearest friends. He's the Mets vice president of alumni relations, a long time, decades long head of PR for the Mets, Jay Horowitz. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with your trip upcoming to New York this week and the deal with Jay Horowitz and what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, Jay called and actually said he was going to be honored for his 45 years plus with the Mets. And he said, look, you don't have to make another grand performance, but I just want to let you know you're invited. I'd love to have you. And I wouldn't miss it, John. I told him, I said, I will be there. Don't even think about it. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to Saturday night, April 5th, before the game at Citi Field. They're going to honor Jay. And I'm not sure everybody that's going to be there that he's asked to come. I know John Franco is going to be there. I know Al Leiter is going to be there. But, you know, he's one of those guys, John, and you know, you've worked with Jay.
Yes.
When Jay Horowitz calls you, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
We'll do whatever you want. So when he asked me if I would be there, the answer is yes, I'll be there. And I'm looking forward to it. It's great to see him. You know, he's got some of the greatest Mets memories and history and stories of anybody you'll ever be around.
Yeah, he's one of the foremost historians for the New York Mets. And I met Jay. The first time I met Jay was actually in 1980, the first season. And I was just a young little sports reporter graduating from a college in Boston. And I got some press credentials, and one of the first interviews he set me up with, he took me to Frank Cashin's suite, like his private box. And I spent the whole game watching the game with Frank Cashin and interviewing him when they took over. I mean, that was that was great. And then I had the opportunity to work closely with Jay when I worked in the minor leagues for the Mets in 81. And I've always had nothing but the highest regard for him. And he's been so helpful, not only to us here at this show, but also what we do for Tunnel the Towers and all the help he's given us there. So an honor for Jay, a great honor and well-deserved for this guy. So I'm very happy. And I'm happy that you're going up there to see that. Speaking of honoring someone, Terry, you know that the all-time favorite player in my entire life was Eddie Cranepool, number 7. And he unfortunately passed away last September. But the Mets this year are honoring Eddie with his number 7 as a patch, which will be on the uniform throughout the season. Of course, Eddie played his entire career for the Mets, 17 years, debuting in 1962. as a 17-year-old, and he was the quintessential Met, and it's great the organization will be remembering him this way. Another great honor for a guy who played his entire year with the Mets. I don't think that'll ever happen in history where you'll see a player spending like 17 or 18 seasons with one team. It's never going to happen.
I agree, John. Of course, the guy who came right out of high school went to the big leagues. But his love of the Mets was always, it was just part of who he was. You know, he would come down a lot in spring training when I managed. I saw him at fantasy camps. He comes in and talks nothing about the Mets and his experience and all the great players and all the great games that he was a part of. And it is truly a great honor to have your number. Unfortunately, it means you're not with us anymore, but have that number on that jersey. And, certainly it's well-deserved by him.
It certainly is. Terry, I wanted to get your take on Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom took the mound for the first time this season, this past Sunday, and he five scoreless innings, struck out six, allowed just two hits, and he got the no decision against the Boston Red Sox. The Rangers won the game 3-2. But how great was it for you to see that DeGrom was not only healthy, but he was kind of lights out? He dominated the Red Sox in those five innings, and his first start of the season, he missed almost all of the past two seasons. So it must have been really great for you to see DeGrom back on the bump and doing and having.
Obviously, John, my experiences with him, he wasn't the pitcher he was is become today, but still one of the great competitors I've ever been around in my life. Some of the games he pitched for me, you cannot duplicate his effort, what he did, how he maneuvered get through a game. There were games where maybe his fastball didn't have the light. So he just made pitches with it and didn't make mistakes. And so now he's this ultra power guy, and he's got the great body to do it. And to see him back out there is really, really fun. I knew him as this fun-loving guy that, was carefree and loved being out there. And I hope that's who he is still today. But it's really nice to see him back on the mound.
Yeah, we certainly wish him a great season this year, that he could stay healthy and have a really full season. And if he does, he's going to dominate for sure.
Oh, yeah, no question. I think he has room on his mantle for just one more Cy Young. Possibly.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be cool. Yeah. Terry, you appeared this week at a great event for Tunnel of the Towers in Palm Beach. It was their Celebrity Golf Classic. Tell us a little bit about that and if you had a good time, and I'm sure you did, but how was that?
Yeah, it was, of course, I've done a number of things now with Tunnel of the Towers in the last year and a half, and, everything they touch is golden. What Frank Siller, what he does, he is just, he's got the perfect personality to do what he does. He knows everybody. It's amazing. You watch him walk around like you did yesterday when I got to the golf tournament, and he knows everybody's first name. He's got a minute for you all the time. He's busier than heck with at this golf outing. And, you're at the Trump International, which is one of the great courses in all of Florida. The most beautiful course, beautiful shape. Matter of fact, the president had played there the day before. So it was in great shape. A lot of people down there, they come out of the woodwork to be a part of it. Beautiful day. The sun was out. We had skydivers. They had the music. Daniel, I think it's Daniel Gonzalez, the guy who sang the national anthem with a retired policeman. Uh-huh. He sang the national anthem, and it was a great event. Well, unfortunately, we got rained out late in the round, but then it was about sharing some time with each other and dinner and more fundraising. And the guy's his energy is off the charts. So,
yeah, obviously you're getting to know Frank Siller, more and more. He played a couple of holes rounds with you yesterday, and so that must be very cool. He's a bundle of energy. He knows how to raise money, and with what they're doing each and every day, it's just spectacular. And I do have a couple of updates here about Tunnel. Terry, so I'm going to get into that right now. I'm happy that you were able to be there. They're asking you to do more and more of these events. they're everywhere now. And if you live in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, listen up. Tunnel to Towers, Charlotte Stair Climb is at a new location. This year, you could climb inside Bank of America Stadium. That's where the NFL Panthers play. How cool is that? This year is a special event. It's more poignant than usual. The Charlotte Climb will honor four law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty last April. Again, the Charlotte Stair Climb is April 27th at the Bank of America Stadium. Coming up on April the 10th, the groundbreaking will be held for the new Tunnel to Towers Veterans Village in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Permanent housing will be provided for more than 80 veterans who have struggled to find stability. This is one of four new villages where work will start this year. The facilities also include comprehensive services for veterans. Since starting its homeless veteran program, Tunnel to Towers has now provided housing to more than 10,000 veterans. These 10,000 vets have nearly 5,000 children who also don't have to worry about where they'll be sleeping. We're going to return with baseball reporter Laura Albanese after these words from former Met pitcher Al Leiter on behalf of Tunnel to Towers.
Hi, I'm former MLB pitcher Al Leiter, and I'm asking you to help Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
I got a call from Tunnel to Towers, and they said, we're going to take care of your mortgage for Jimmy on Veterans Day.
All right, you ready?
It changed my life. It changed my son's life.
Just $11 a month will go a long way to support our first responders, soldiers, and veterans. Go to T2T.org for more information on how you can help.
Well, the Mets open their season on the road in Houston and are in Miami as we record this show before heading home to play the Toronto Blue Jays in the home opener. We're going to get into all of that and bring on for the first time on our show a sports reporter and columnist for Newsday, an analyst for Baseball Night in New York on SNY, covering the Mets and the Yankees. And she's a co-host of the First Time Listener, Longtime Caller podcast, Laura Albanese. Laura, welcome to the Terry Collins Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
First time.
Well, thanks for being on, Laura. You know, John, I also see Laura at the Queens Baseball Conference in the winter. So, you know, she's everywhere. She's when it has baseballs with it, she's around. So it's great to see her on the show.
Well,
yeah, I really do go everywhere. It's pretty funny. I don't know where I'm going to be at any given time.
Laura, for the listeners and viewers of this show, give us a little bit of a background on yourself and the places that you've worked.
Yeah, sure. So I actually grew up in an immigrant family that had no interest in baseball, but I was obsessed with it from a very, very young age. Every summer, I would just watch and try to teach myself, and I really enjoyed that. And I got into journalism. Didn't think I'd be a sports reporter. Wanted to be, but I just didn't see a lot of women in the field at that time. So I started in news. I became an intern at Newsday while I was still in college. And after my internship ended, the sports editor at Newsday, Hank Winicki, goes, wow, you know, Laura, I constantly see you in here watching the baseball games when you're not working on Newsside. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm absolutely obsessed with the sport, with all sports, actually. And I was looking for a job, and he offered me a part-time position covering high school sports. So I worked my way up, and then in 2014, I finally got to live the dream of being able to cover professional sports. So that was my first year covering both the Yankees and the Mets. And so now I'm a columnist and get to cover both, and it has been an absolutely fantastic dream come true.
And you've been getting a lot more visibility. Seen you recently on the MLB Network with three of your three other very qualified women that were all together talking baseball in the opening of the season. I thought that was really cool. So how did that come about, and who were those other three reporters that you were with on that segment?
Yeah, so that started with Melanie Newman. It was for Women's History Month, and we were doing the AL East preview. Nope. We had a radio reporter from Toronto. Then we had the Athletic beat writer for the Red Sox, and Melanie, of course, covering the Orioles, and just being able to talk about baseball with them in that environment, and be able to represent women in sports was was a really big honor. We're making a lot of strides. There are definitely more women than when I started. When I first made my way into a major league clubhouse, I was maybe 21 years old and terrified of my own shadow. And now there are more women on the younger side trying to break in. And I do love to see that because I think they give different perspectives and different stories, and a little bit of variety never hurt anybody.
Well, we're happy that, your footprint is growing throughout the baseball world. And once again, welcome back. But this week, the Mets, first week of the season, a slow start offensively. The bats came alive in Miami so far. And Mets hit four homers in their 10-4 win in the opening game of the series. Some solid starting pitching. The bullpen has done well. I'd like to get both of your takes so far on what you've seen. It's been a short sample size, but Terry first, then Laura, what do you guys think about the Mets so far this season?
Well, you know, again, Giants, if I don't get too caught up. I didn't get too caught up on it when I was managing. You know, it's such a marathon. Yet, you know, when you want to get out of the gate, you know, on a positive note, obviously for your fan base. You know, there was when I first started managing in spring training, it was brought to your attention. Hey, we got to win some games here because we got to sell season tickets, and we don't want to have a bad spring training. But it's all about getting everybody ready. And it's a little done a little different today because of the all the monitoring of the health of the players. I mean, I used to have before spring training even started, I could tell every player that walked in there how many at bats he was going to get in spring training because I had researched every year they'd ever played the number of bats they had in spring training and how they got out of the gate and how they finished the season. So, and today it's done completely different. So, but they showed last year that first month of the season, first month and a half, you know, and even though wins are just as important as they are in September, you know, it's going through them, the hot part of summer that really the championship teams come together. But so I think it's going to be good. I really like their lineup. I think their pitching staff's got innings in them, and I thought they did really a good job of putting some positive arms in that bullpen. So, you know, again, you got to get to Diaz, who the other night threw the ball as good as I've seen him in a long time. So, you know, lots of positive things, even though they're 2-2. That means nothing. I just think, again, as this team grows and grows together, and Lindor gets some more bats under his belt, it's going to be a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I am very excited about this team. You saw Pete Alonso hit his first home run yesterday, the grand slam. Juan Soto's going to be Juan Soto. He's getting on base. I know he kind of had a difficult ending to the game against the Astros, but that is going to happen. We look at last season, they started 0-5, and it was a very loud 0-5. Everyone couldn't stop talking about it as if the sky was falling. And what do we get? We got one of the most exciting Mets seasons probably since 2015. So I do like that lineup. Shamania's hurt. Going to get him back soon enough. I'm going to be really interested to see what Kodai Senga is able to do. I feel like he's going to be a little bit of a question mark. You know, he had that dominant year, but nobody really knows whether or not if he can reclaim that dominance. And secondly, how much things have changed in the last year for him in terms of how he's able to handle the workload and also keep his own body healthy. Like Terry, that bullpen's good. That's David Stern's bread and butter. And to see Edwin Diaz be Edwin Diaz, I mean, that's the key. I mean, when Edwin Diaz went down in the World Baseball Classic, I think there was that general feeling around the organization of, oh, no. And the season hadn't even started yet. So even if you get some version of vintage Edwin Diaz, I mean, that shortens the game in a way that I think will make for a really interesting season. And frankly, everyone had penciled in the Braves to be the absolute favorites, but they're already going through some pretty significant trials here.
They're 0-5.
They're 0-5. Yeah. Ronaldo Lopez got hurt. Dirksen Prof. I say it's a mess down in Atlanta.
And they lost a big player with a PED suspension.
Right, yeah. So 80 games for Dirksen Prof. That's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, John, it's really hard to – I understand there's good pitching out there. You can't lose the kind of pitching the Braves lost and think they're going to just come up with guys, especially coming back. They're coming off. You're going to bring up guys who spent the last year hurt. So you don't know what you're going to expect. You've got to worry about having innings limits on those guys. So, you know, and even starting the season, I know the Braves have done a great job and they still have some pretty positive players. I mean, Acuña is going to come back, but I still think it's the Mets and the Phillies are the teams that are going to contend.
Hello?
The Lord, Candy. Did you hear? What kind of maniac is in the neighborhood? I'm scared to even be by my windows.
Did you hear she got shot?
She wasn't shot. It was an axe.
Based on a true story, Jessica Biel stars in Candy on Channel 4. Stream now.
Well, of course, you got the Dodgers who refuse to lose. I mean, what, are they 6-0?
Yeah.
Not if I'm not 6-0. And that's going to be interesting. You know, when I look at the Dodgers, the only thing that I can think of as a sort of Achilles heel is that some of their superstars are particularly young, and that bit them a little bit last year when you have Mookie Betts getting hurt and Freddie Freeman getting hurt. And now Freddie Freeman got hurt again. He injured his ankle going to the shower, so we don't know the severity of that injury. It's 162 games. Anything can happen, even if you're the Dodgers, even if you're a super team.
Yeah, Freddie has been a little snake bitten with that ankle, but we hope he comes back quickly. But yeah, they're kind of a super team. It's crazy. In New York, of course, the big story is Juan Soto. For me, it was almost kind of nice in the game against the Marlins where he wasn't that much of a focus because the first three games of the season, it was all Juan Soto. He was the only one that was doing anything, whether it was striking out to end the game, which certainly delighted the Yankee fans. I mean, this is going to be something that's going to be going on all season between the Mets and the Yankee fans. I could just see it. But Soto has that Soto effect. I'd like to get your assessment, Laura, because you saw him all last season at Yankee Stadium as well. This guy, no matter what he does, is the focus. And then, TC, I want to get your response as well. The Soto effect so far, and what do you think this season is going to shape up, especially when it comes to that Mets-Yankees fans rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, watching Juan Soto last year a whole lot when he was with the Yankees, everything was an event. I think about times in the past when things were an event, like you'd have Harvey Day in 2015, and you have these players that kind of like take over, the fan consciousness. And, you know, when Soto came up to bat, everyone paid attention. But that was also in a situation where he's got Aaron Judge in the lineup as well. So that's a huge superstar in his own right. Judge actually had a better season than Soto did last year. And while the Mets certainly have superstars in Lindor and P. Alonso, I do think this sort of star power, because of the length and the heft of that contract, kind of changes the narrative a little bit. Where I referenced the Houston at bat where he struck out against Josh Hader and the game. But, you know, everyone was expecting him to do something great there because that's what happens when Juan Soto goes up to the plate. You're expecting something magical. I do like what we saw yesterday. You know, the idea that when Soto was coming to the Mets, he wanted that lineup protection, and he particularly wanted that lineup protection in the form of Pete Alonso. So what does Soto do yesterday in that beginning? He gets on base. Pete Alonso hits a home run because suddenly the bases are loaded and you need to get speed of something to hit. So, I mean, that's the Soto effect. One of the other aspects of Soto that I think we're going to see emerge, because it was a storyline that we saw emerge last year with the Yankees, was because he's such a student of the game and he takes hitting so seriously and he's really able to look at the intricacies of it. He had a big impact on the young players in terms of sharing his knowledge. Not that Soto isn't a young player himself, but I'll be interested to see like what he can do with the Mark Vientos or Brett Beatty or Luis Angel Acuña in terms of sharing his wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, I think Laura's right. I mean, I didn't see Juan as much as she saw him, but, you know, he's an impact player. But, you know, John, I will tell you, and I'm all for, you know, I've had some great, great players on my teams, and I got news for you. At the end of the year, it's going to take 28, 30 guys, 35 guys to get the job done, and he's going to be a huge part of it. His bat in the lineup is huge. But as Laura alluded to, I mean, to have Pete hit behind him and do what he did yesterday, that's going to happen a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Pete's going to have to come up with a lot in a lot of big situations with guys on base. And if he continues to do what he normally does and add his drive in runs, they're going to win some games. And because of Juan. But, and I think Laura's right. I think because of the contract and the length of the contract, there's that much more attention on him. He's still a great player. And, you know, we've got to get away, from what they're making. They're great players. You know what? Steve wanted him. He went out and paid for it. And so, but he's still, you can't do any more than what God has given you. And that's great ability. So go out and use that. You know, I watched Barry Bonds for years and years and years be the best player in baseball. But he went to one World Series, I think, in the whole time he was in Pittsburgh or San Francisco. So it is. It's going to take a team effort. And I think that's why I like their team. I think they've got some depth. I think as they get through it, they're going to probably go out and get a couple more pieces to give them some extra security like they did last year towards the end of the season when they got Winker and you know, they just kind of gave them a little more flexibility. I think they're going to do that. But, you know, four games into the year, you know, they're sitting okay. They're going to be just fine. And again, it takes a little time to get it going because once that bell rings, man, the attitude, everything changes. Every bat's different. Every night's different. You're competing on a nightly basis. You know, you're not looking at the end of a game at some guy who's going to start the season in Double-A. These are big league players now. They're going to be out there for nine innings. And so sometimes it takes a little while. I go back to the time, John, you and I talked about when I had Michael Kadire who said, I want to play nine innings my last two games that I play. Because I have to get ready to play nine innings when that season starts. And as we see through spring training, did anybody, I think Brandon Nimmo, the last game, played nine innings. He might be the only guy that I saw play nine innings, you know, in spring training. So it's all about getting these guys ready. And a lot of times they use that first 3-4 weeks to get themselves in that kind of shape.
Yeah, it's an ongoing process for sure. And Lindor didn't play nine in spring training, but I think he played like 7 or 8. Do we have to get used to these slow starts from Lindor? Because it's happened, let's say, even last year, you know, he didn't really get hot until the end of May 2023. He didn't really get hot till June. But it's just something that we have to get prepared for, that Lindor is going to get off slow. But once he gets going, then there's no stopping him, as we saw before.
You know, John, I'm going to tell you, I had a player in Anaheim named Tim Salmon who was easily one of the top 10 players in the American League. And I first got the job there, and he got off to a real slow start. It was first early in May, and we were in Minnesota playing a game, and Tim was hitting 150 or something. And I said to him about taking some extra batting practice the next day. And he said, yeah, I'll be out. So a little while later, he came back in. He said, are you worried about me? I said, no, I've seen your numbers. He said, Terry, I'm the worst starter in baseball. I'm not worried about it. I'll be there in the end. And sure enough, at the end of the season, he had 31 or 32 homers and 150 in RBIs, and he hit like 307 or something. So, you know, and these guys, they don't get all caught up in it, because if they know they're slow starters, they're slow starters. What they do is they just get up there and keep grinding those out of bats until they get comfortable and start getting hot.
Yeah.
Laura. Yeah, I mean, we saw it last year with Lindor. I mean, he was getting booed in April, which just like blows my mind when you're talking about a person who came in second in MVP voting. We have this propensity, Aaron Boone called this overreaction week, which I think is about right, where everything is just magnified to like this ridiculous degree. It's the first week of the season. It's the first month of the season. It's the reason why the season is so long. A player that is the caliber of Francisco Lindor is not going to fall off the face of the planet just because he had a bad first month. If he's the type of player that gets off to a slow start, that's the price of doing business for the player that can kind of take over in September and October the way that we saw.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Brett Beatty had a great spring. Mendy has started this season off with a bit of with the platoon with Beatty and Luis Angel Acuña. I'd like to get both of your thoughts, first Laura this time, then TC, on the early platoon and, you know, what it looks like to you with Beatty and Acuña both there competing for more playing time.
I mean, it is going to be interesting, because my assumption is that when Jeff McNeil gets back from the injured list, then one of these guys is going back to AAA. So, I mean, there's a lot on the line here. When you look at Acuña, I do like his confidence at the plate. Like, sometimes his at-bats, I feel, are not quite as competitive as Brett Beatty's. I might be wrong here. I do feel like Brett Beatty is maturing as a hitter, but I don't see the same confidence in Beatty that I do in Acuña. So I would like to see that progression on both sides, on you know, for both of them. With Acuña, there's a lot of versatility there in terms of what he can do in the infield, and that is something that Beatty has also been trying to do in addition to learning how to play the outfield. So, I mean, it kind of depends on what we see here. I was interested in some of Francisco Lindor's comments during spring training, where it said that Acuña looked a little bit bored. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that assessment has changed. But if that continues to be an issue, I would assume Lindor saying something like that out loud was either a motivation for Acuña or perhaps a warning sign. So I'm not sure.
Terry. Yeah, John, it's when you're a young player and you're used to playing every day because that's what you did in the minor leagues. When you come up and you're asked to platoon, I'm telling you, it's just a different idea because now the days you're in there, you have to perform because you know your opportunities are going to start to shrink. And the true great backup players are the ones who know they're going to play perhaps 2 days a week. And they know how to keep themselves ready. But, you know, poor Brett, I like Brett a lot. I think he's got a really great potential. But, you know, you're in a town where there's not a lot of grace period. You know, you're supposed to be good. You got to be good. And I think sometimes he might mount a little pressure on himself because he is a big guy. He's not going to be playing his position at 6'3" and 215 pounds is a lot to ask. Acuña, I think what Francisco did in spring training is sent a message. We're going to play the game here, and I truly believe this is what leaders do. Hey, we're going to play the game here in New York a certain way, and this is what we expect. These are the expectations here, and if you don't want to do it this way, we'll find somebody else who will. And that's not only not his job to find somebody, but when you're a young player and you've been called out by one of the best players in baseball, that means more than having the manager call you in the office and say, look, don't ever not run a ball out again. When your own teammates say it, that says a huge message. And I thought it was well taken. And I thought I really liked what I've seen so far out of Luis Angel. He's, you know, he's got set some really interesting tools and some skills. So it'll be interesting. But I agree with Laurel. And when McNeil comes back, he's going to get the majority of the playing time, I'm sure.
Yeah, what's the status with McNeil? Do you know, Laura, any updates? I heard that there was a little bit of a setback for him and he may be out longer than they anticipated with the oblique.
That is essentially what I heard as well. I mean, everyone knows oblique injuries, they're tricky beasts. So, you know, it could be a little bit longer. I mean, we've seen so many times where a guy goes down with an oblique injury and it's supposed to be a few weeks and it ends up being closer to a few months. So we will see. I mean, for me, like Jeff McNeil for the last few years has been a little bit of an enigma in terms of what he's able to produce. I mean, I still love his bat to ball skills. I love what he was able to do in the latter half of the season last year. And yeah. I mean, if he can be that version of Jeff McNeil, that's just such a fantastic weapon because of his versatility. But in terms of the injury, no idea. I do not pretend to know if I can predict oblique injury.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics say astonishing, tremendous, a triumph of savings.
Are you talking about Death of a Unicorn?
No, Sergey, it's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare Market.
Oh.
But you can use this magnificent offer to see Death of a Unicorn only in cinemas.
Woohoo!
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compare Market. Simples!
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Tough one for sure. On the other platoon that they're doing out in center field, I'm going to get both of your thoughts on Jose Siri. He's certainly shown he can cause some havoc on the base paths as he did over the weekend and just kind of stealing a run in a way. His defense will be something to watch as well with Siri sharing center field duties with Tyron Taylor. That's another platoon I'd love to get your opinions on, both of you. First TC, then Laura.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think obviously what you're reading, Carlos is he's looking at the opposing pitcher and he kind of looks at their numbers and matchup wise. where maybe certain, you know, Tyrone maybe have an advantage against certain guys because he's more of a, I don't even know, a slight, maybe more sliders, and Siri doesn't hit the slide, whatever it might be. I think that's going to be difficult. But, you know, when this team starts to get on a roll offensively, to have that glove in center field, I can't tell you how many games we won with Juan Lagares in center field. And we didn't care if he hit 200 or 300. He saved games by us, well, what he did in center field. So I think that's going to come down to a big factor. And especially, you look at, you know, you got that starting pitching. And I'm going to tell you, those guys pitch better when they know that they can make a mistake and it's going to get caught in the outfield.
Yeah. I mean, Siri, he's a great defender with, I think, like a little bit of sneaky pop. I always liked Tyrone Taylor in the outfield as well. I do think he steals some outs. I enjoyed that little sequence we saw yesterday with Luis Angel Acuna and then Jose Siri knocking him in, and just the speed on the base paths. Not always necessarily a boon for Mets teams in the past couple of years, but to have that kind of weapon where opposing pitchers do feel the pressure. And Siri provides that, and Acuna provides that, and having that tool is always great. I'm intrigued with him. I think probably he might be able to hit a little bit more than we thought, but we're going to find out.
We'll find out.
I've always enjoyed Tyrone Taylor. I like what he's able to do in the outfield. That's about as good a platoon as you can ask for right now with what you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, I know you had some questions for Terry, especially about what has become kind of the biggest news story, not just in baseball and across sports, has something to do with the bat. So why don't you take it away?
I am fascinated by the torpedo bats, which I feel like everyone is fascinated by. I mean, not necessarily that they're new, but I mean, Terry, what do you make of this? And now the news just came out that the Braves have just started ordering a few for their own lineup.
Well, Laura, Dan and I discussed this before we came on the show. And, you know, you remember I brought this up. You remember a few years ago when somebody came up with the idea, because nobody wants the end of your bat doesn't do any damage. So they cut the end of it out and made the cone shape, the cup at the end of the bat. And the purpose behind that was to put the majority of the weight back in the barrel of the bat. And that's all this is. It's done exactly the same thing. They've made that part of the bat a little bit bigger. But I got news for you. That will have to wait to see the guys who hit 250. Are they going to hit 300 with this barrel now? Or if the guy who hits, you know, 5 to 9 home runs every year, is he going to hit 15 to 19? I think we're going to have to wait for a long time to see what the results are going to be there. Because I will tell you what, hitting's still hard. I don't care. I'm going to bring a bat that I used, and I used a big, great big bat, a great big handle, and I choked up real far on it. So I hit more balls here, and it didn't help. You know, it didn't make much difference because unless you hit them there solidly on a consistent basis, you know, it doesn't really help you. So I'll have to wait and draw conclusions, because the guys I'm seeing hit home runs are home run hitters. Show me some of these little guys with a little bit of, you know, just a little pop once in a while when they come up with this great big barrel. Because we're going to look at some things. Everybody's got to decide whether or not that's illegal. Well, you still got to be able to hit it in the middle of that bigger sweet spot on that bat. So it'll be fun to watch. I think it's interesting. It's a talking point now, just as it was years ago with the baseball, and it was supposed to be loaded, and then it was the soft baseball. The balls weren't flying, and everybody's got to find a way to, you know, change the game. And this guy's come up with an idea. Hopefully, it makes him a lot of money, and maybe if it makes hitting better, good, because pitching's pretty dominant right now.
And that kind of leads me to my next point. I mean, for years we've been hearing about the pitching labs and these guys getting optimized and, you know, throwing more pitches and throwing harder. And it felt like for a while there, hitters were trying to catch up because they were basically still, you know, using the same broomstick that we've been using for 120 years or whatever it is. When you see how now hitting labs are becoming a bigger part of Major League Baseball teams, how do you think that'll affect the game going forward?
Well, Laura, again, I haven't seen, every year I look at numbers, and I know the new theory is batting averages don't count. They don't mean anything anymore. One of the things that drove me crazy when I used to go to one minor league games is see guys are hitting 215 in A ball, and they're not bothered by it. If you hit 215 when I played an A-ball, I don't care if you used a stinking wiffle ball bat, you got released.
So a few years ago, guys started to get bigger barrels and thinner handles, and that's why bats were snapping. Well, Major League Baseball, they actually had rules. The umpires used to come over with a ring. They took every bat, and it had to fit through that ring to be, you know, to be qualified as a bat you could use. Well, they don't do that anymore, and I don't know if these bats can, you know, if the ring can go through this new bat that they've got. But I don't, you know, I know hitting is very, very hard, and I'm sorry. When I played, I saw guys who had great big barrels, and I saw guys with little bitty skinny barrels. When the guys who could hit. I saw guys who little bitty bats. There was a time when everybody used smaller bats because there was the breaking ball eras where you had to stay back a little bit longer. And then you had the power guys, which I said for years, used to talk to the older players. And when they faced those real hard throwers, they used great big heavy bats. And they let that velocity and the hardness of their bat do all the damage. They didn't overswing. But today, it's all about swinging as hard as you can. They didn't worry about that years ago. And so now they've come up with a way to maybe in the most important part of the bat is to enlarge that part and make it more dense. Well, I've got to see it. Again, I think, and Laura's already alluded to this. Hey, we're the first week of the season. And the New York Yankees had a big day against – a bad pitching staff. I don't care what you tell me. That was a bad pitching staff in a ballpark that is, you know, home run hitter's ballpark. So, you know, I think we need to get through the whole year or get through at least half the year where we see if this is really the case where this new shape of this bat really does damage. And I know it's a talking point. I don't like to talk about that stuff. I like to talk about, you know, pitching. I like to talk about the way the game is played. I like to talk about losing the game because, you know, geez, you didn't hit the cutoff man and the batter runner got an extra base. That to me is baseball. Now where I've spent too many years seeing guys come up there with all different kinds of bats and all, you know, remember when this thing came on years and years ago, it was pine tar. Now they create these grips for guys to use, you know, and nobody used those 50 years ago. And guys who hit 350, guys hit 370, guys were hitting four. Tony Gwynn almost hit 400. He didn't have any wraps on his bat. And so, you know, it comes down to for me, John, it will always be the talent on the field. That's what plays, not the equipment, the talent on the field. Joe Morgan's glove was this big and he won several gold gloves. And at the same time, you go to another guy, Bobby Gritch used a bigger glove. It doesn't matter. It's the talent on the field that gets the job done. I don't care what kind of weapons they got. You know what? The real good players execute. And we just watched Jake DeGrom, pitch a great game the other day. If he was back being a breaking ball pitcher, would he still be that successful? No, I don't know if you know that. I think he would because I saw him do it. But, you know, I think, again, it's a talking point for people who need a talking point. Wait till the season's over, and then because if all of a sudden home runs go out of sight because of this bat, they'll do something about this bat. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah, no question about it. But it is a talking point. It's all over the media. It's all over the national TV news. And Terry, before we wrap up this little discussion here about torpedo bats, one of your former players weighed in yesterday on X, and he's somebody I wanted to get your opinion of his quote here about the bat, because he feels that, you know, if he had the bat back then, he could have done a lot better. Bartolo Colon.
Laura, were you around him much, Bartolo?
I was a good bit. Yeah, I was. He was quite the character.
He was Yeah. He would have hit more home runs if he'd have hit the ball more times. As I told you, our hitting coach at the time, Pat Russer, told me one day, he goes, he's going to surprise somebody one of the days, and he's going to swing and he's going to hit a homer. He's going to ambush somebody, but he didn't like hitting because I know one thing, he didn't want that ball in on him at all because that thing hurts when it comes in there. I'll tell you.
Well, he certainly got 1.6 million impressions on that post.
That's a great quote. That's a great quote.
It's still one of my favorite baseball
moments. I know it was ridiculous, but him hitting the home run will just is etched in my brain.
Well, can you imagine? Can you imagine when one of the great home run hitters in the game might have said somebody might come up and said, "Geez, if I could." Albert Pujols, I would have hit 1,000 home runs if I had had the torpedo bat. I mean,
oh my God.
When's it going to stop?
I mean, I kind of
when's it
going to
stop?
It. Well, now.
Yeah.
Well,
how
now
about bunting? Maybe guys could bunt better if they had a barrel that was this big.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's a lost art.
There we go.
That's a lost art. Bunting.
That's
there
how I break into Major League Baseball, just becoming the bunt queen with the torpedo bat.
Yeah, that's right. Oh man, well I think it's going to be fun. If this spikes interest in the game, more power to it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple more things for Laura. Laura, you were at both Yankee Stadium and Citi Field last week.
I was.
When both teams unveiled their food offerings for 2025. Talk to us about what team is rolling out this year, what the food looks like. You are a bit of a foodie. You're reporting on this. So who has the better stadium cuisine this year, the Bronx or Queens?
I am going to get raked over the coals for this because for years it was Citi Field. This year it's the Yankees. I'm so sorry, guys. The Yankees, they added a dumpling option. They've got... I love a dumpling. I absolutely love a dumpling. They've got almost like this very high, like, pollutant sushi thing. I don't know what it is, but it essentially was like almost like omakase level of sushi. Like, it was these perfectly curated little bites, and I'm like, that's pretty incredible. And they had a foot-long hot dog from Street Bird from Marcus Danielson that was topped with a chicken tender. I don't like gimmick food. I thought I was going to hate this thing. It was actually really good. I'm very, very sorry. But the Mets.
A foot long hot dog with the chicken tender on top of it. Foot long hot dog with the chicken tender on top of it.
It was surprisingly good. I don't even know what to say about that. I hate gimmick foods, but it was good. But the Mets do have an entire tomahawk steak that you can get at the ballpark, which is.
Tomahawk steak?
A tomahawk, which is egregious. I have no idea how much this thing costs. It must be. It has to be like $150. It was the size of my forearm. I don't know how you throw a ballpark, but Godspeed. And you probably need to take out a second mortgage for it. But what are you going to do?
That's a pricey piece of meat.
But yeah, no, the ballpark food is it's getting interesting. Everyone's trying to outdo each other. At this point, the Yankees and Mets have made it pretty clear they're in direct competition with each other over the food. Which is fantastic.
Give me a hot dog, put a little mustard on it, give me a beer, and for my dessert, I'll get a Mr. Softy at the ballpark. I'm not going
to a
tomahawk steak or any dumplings or anything like that.
I will say there are great innovations in eating things out of baseball hats because Yankee Stadium has a tiramisu in a tiny Yankees baseball hat.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Pretty good.
Well, the wars are going to continue, the Subway Series, and I guess we have to put the food into it as well. Healthy competition, well, maybe not so healthy if you overindulge with the Mets and the Yankees. Laura, all season long this year, we're going to do a deep dive into the 2015 Mets season. Tears of joy, celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the National League champion New York Mets. You were just kind of getting started, but what are your memories of that 2015 season led by Terry Collins?
Yeah, that was my first full season covering Major League Baseball, and it was definitely a wild ride. I think I got spoiled because of how cool that team was and how interesting that was. I mean, the memories that stick out for me, obviously the Wilmer Flores game, David Wright hitting a home run coming back after spinal stenosis, and that incredible rotation. That really made you feel like this team was going to be very, very good for a very, very long time. Harvey Day, DeGrom, Zach Wheeler, very sneakily becoming what we now know to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. It was just a fun team with a lot of characters. And Terry, I can't imagine what that was like for you, especially going through that that August and September during the 6 or 7 weeks that Yoenis Cespedes lit baseball on fire.
Laura, it was, again, one of those things that if you spend your life in baseball like I have and like you are going to, you live for it. I mean, this is what you signed up for, to experience those kind of things and to be a part of it and watch these tremendously talented guys go out and do their jobs at a level you can't even imagine. So it was very fun, and I agree with you. I've said forever, I just give me 2 years where I could have those five young pitchers pitch every fifth day, and I will be happy for the rest of my life if I could have been able to have that, because they were very, very special. But as you've seen on teams, Lauren, the last couple of years, the camaraderie, the closeness of those guys in that clubhouse, due to the great leadership from, you know, Kadire, Wright, Granderson, you know, it was all there. Bartolo, they were all there. And every night they took the field, man, they wanted to win. They wanted to beat you up. And it was really fun to watch and be a part of it all.
When you Excellent. See kind of the change from the first half of that season to the second half of that season, obviously there was the Cespedes addition, which was huge. But was there anything in the personality of the team or the way that they felt about themselves that you feel shifted after the trade deadline?
Well, you know, when Sandy started to make some moves, you could hear the players talk about, like, wow, the front office, you know. Because we were just hanging in there. We weren't doing anything exceptional. But all of a sudden, here came, you know, Tyler Clippard, or here came Addison Reed or Kelly Johnson. And the clubhouse started to fill up with, you know, good veteran major league players. And the guy's attitude just changed. And you saw it as it grew and grew and grew and culminized with, obviously, the Cespedes trade. But, you know, when we started out that year, you know, again, we knew David was going to have injury issues, and we had to, you know, fill in for that huge hole in our lineup. But, you know, in my position, I never worried about who wasn't there. I only worried about who was there, because the guys that weren't there, I couldn't, you know, I would kill myself thinking about how bad I felt, because we weren't as good as we should be. And yet the guys, what you had to do was pay attention to who you had to get them better, so that the fans, when they came to the ballpark, saw a good product. And that was the only thing on my mind. But as they started, Sandy started making these moves, all of a sudden you're saying, hey, you know, this is good. We're starting to look pretty good here. And that just, you know, and that's the stuff that made it fun every night to go to the park, because it was fun to watch them play, and you didn't know who was going to walk through the door in the next trade.
Yeah. I think one of my big memories from that is after you guys lost to Kansas City, at the end, their fans are still congregated at Citi Field, and David Wright led all the players out onto the field, and just that show of leadership. And he thanked all the fans, and they stayed out there for a really, really long time. And I remember people were emotional, people were crying, and I just thought that it was just indicative. Everyone knows what a great leader he is, but indicative of the type of person he was, that even in what must have been one of the darkest times in terms of knowing his own health was on the decline and knowing the team had just lost, that he was thinking about, okay, the fans, let's give them one last goodbye.
And, you know, Laura, that is a great, great story. That is something great to bring up. You know, this is the first time, even I knew it happened, but this is the first time anybody's even ever brought that up. And that's a great point to bring up.
Yeah. I remember being out there and just being like, wow, this is something. Yeah. This is a moment.
Yeah, that's an amazing. I never heard that story either. This is the first time I heard it. So David, of course, the leader that he is, being honored this year with the number retirement and the Mets Hall of Fame induction. TC will be there as well. Laura, I'm sure you'll be there as well. It's great having you on here for the first time on the Terry Collins Show. Why don't you let everybody know about your podcast and where they can follow you on social media?
Yeah, so you can follow me on X at Albanese Laura. You can read my articles at Newsday, and my podcast is First Time Listener, Long Time Caller. It is a very lighthearted sports and pop culture podcast where we kind of just try to bring fun back into sports, because sometimes I think people take it just a little bit too seriously.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope to have you on again real soon.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much
Laura. Having. Thanks for coming on. You were great.
Thank you. You guys are awesome.
great segment, Terry. It was great to have her on. And, you know, between her, Andy Martino, and some of the others that you bring on, we kind of, like you said, we bring the fans some stories from the inside that they may not normally hear.
And, you know, John, she brought up a good point. You know, women in sports, they're here to stay. And they do have a different perspective. And yet they, because, you know, they are women and they're in a somewhat of a, used to be a man's world. I mean, they're well-educated on every subject. And it's so interesting to hear them talk about, you know, baseball or football or whatever, because they know what they're talking about. They have a great insight, a great feel for it. And what I really like is they have strong opinions. And that's, and I like that. I you know, I'm of course a huge Kim Eng fan who probably set the tone for all women and certainly in baseball. And it's, I think it's great for women to be a part of this. We're starting to see women coaches. So, you know, there's a place in the world for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I wanted Laura to come on, because I watch SNY, I read her columns in Newsday, and there's always kind of a human perspective in those columns that she writes. And so I was happy to have her on, Terry. So what we're going to do now, it's time for the Tunnel of Towers Amazing Hero of the Week segment. And of course, each and every week, we tell a heartwarming story about those lives that Tunnel to Towers has touched and impacted. So let's go to that right now.
My name is Selena Cervantes. My husband is Miguel Cervantes, who was a firefighter with the Rancho Cucamonga Fire District. On our first date, he went back to the fire station and told the guys that he was going to marry me, and we got married 3 years later. He was actually on duty the morning of 9/11, and from that day, he realized that he was going to be search and rescue certified. So that's what he absolutely loved. In 2022, he was starting to have like an upset stomach. So they said, don't take him to urgent care, take him straight to ER. And they just said, it's not appendicitis. I'm sorry to say, but you have a large mass over your ascending colon. My husband's cancer is directly related to his service as a firefighter. They attribute it to the fumes and just the materials that he was around in his over 20-year career. Once that doctor came in and said there was nothing they could do, he just looked at me and he said, is it okay if I go? My immediate thought after he was gone was, how and why? How am I going to do this? The kids asked me, are we going to have to move? This is our home. And I told them, no. We're not going to have to move because of an amazing foundation that's taking care of us. Tunnel to Towers was actually a huge surprise to me. They told me about their mortgage program for fallen first responders. I'm bawling, crying. I think they're crying. And they reassured me that this is the exact reason why they do this and why Tunnel to Towers was started. Tunnel to Towers supports America's heroes. Let us do good.
We will have another Amazing Hero of the Week segment on our next show and throughout the season. Well, TC, that's going to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on all podcast platforms and on our YouTube channel. So just go to youtube.com/ the Terry Collins Show. And Terry, before we go, we'd also like everybody to check out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. This week on Jay's show, he's going to honor Rusty Staub and highlights the Answer to Call nonprofit Rusty started 40 years ago. So that's also available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. Also like to thank for the Terry Collins Show, the creative director, Marsh, the man with one name, and also our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. Terry, we hope you have a great trip up to New York and opening day and honoring Jay. So we look forward to seeing you next week right here.
I look forward to it, John. Thank you.
All righty. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. Have a great week, everyone.